ICEA Gear has outfitted over 10,000 bow hunters across the country, and we're continuing to raise the bar when it comes to bow hunting camo. New for the 23 season, we introduce our never-before-seen panel fabric system designed to be dead quiet, along with our patent-pending bow hunting collar. ICEA Gear. Features and function built for bow hunters by bow hunters. Learn more at asiogear.com.
I feel like I know what's in the heart of every hunter, because I mean, I've done it so much. You know, I figure at this point, 9 years of my life has been lived in the wilderness and, you know, hunting or fishing camp somewhere. And just through all those conversations that I've had with people, and I just think that the heart of hunters is, I mean, that's what America was founded on. People that are adventurous, that are seeking to test themselves. And I just think that we need more men, and we need more, you know, kind of like I said, the rednecks, the coyotes, you know, as I call us, is just the people or those among us that now society maybe kind of wants to brush to the side, maybe sort of exterminate.
Welcome to Bear Bow Hunter Podcast with your host, Nate Bailey, where we look to the ancient paths of our hunting ancestors to guide our future, where woodsmanship and hard work outweigh advanced shooting devices, where we value those who have gone before us and welcome those who are yet to come. Join us as we exchange valuable insight about the bear bow hunter's lifestyle. Hey guys, I just wanted to come on here before I get into this podcast with Billy Moles. I wanted to let you know we had some lags in, you know, some of that internet lagging going on in the podcast, but the content is so good and our conversation's so good that you're going to want to listen to this. It's a good podcast that I think you're going to get a lot out of. So let's head right into it. And Billy Moles, the Alaskan guide. Follow the guide. Welcome to another edition of Bear Bow Hunters and the Life Outdoors podcast. I'm going to run this podcast on both because the guest that we have today is somebody that everybody needs to hear from. I found him on YouTube and I reached out to him and he was kind enough to come on. And his name is Billy Moles. How you doing, Billy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so fill us in a little bit about who you are, what you do on YouTube, and what you do here at home. You've been I'll kind of fill in everybody just a little bit. You've been a guide in Alaska for how many years now?
24.
You're not old enough to be a guide in Alaska.
I've been guiding, I guess, for 23. I've been going to Alaska for 24. So I did a year and a half apprenticeship as a packer. But yeah, guiding for 23 and, Lord willing, counting.
There you go. And so what part of Alaska do you guide? You guide pretty much all of the state, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been all over the years. You know, right now, like I guided on Kodiak for a bunch of years. I've kind of hunted various areas in Western Alaska, a little bit in Southeast Alaska. Now I'm primarily guiding in the Brooks Range, Northern Brooks Range for sheep, caribou, grizzly bear. Doing some moose guiding in the Southern Brooks Range, moose, grizzly bear, and then brown bear in the Alaska Peninsula, lower Alaska Peninsula.
Right on, right. And so how I started seeing what you were doing is I went on YouTube, and you'd been selling DVDs for quite a while, but then you started putting it on YouTube, didn't you? Like, it's only been a few years, correct?
Yeah. So ever since I started, I've filmed my hunts. The very first hunt I was ever on, the hunter had a video camera, so I was the packer. And so he was filming his hunt, and then when he went to shoot this bear, he asked me if I would film him shooting the bear. So I filmed him shooting the bear. He sends a copy of this videotape. It was like VHS tape, home to my parents, and then they kind of passed it around to friends and family. And, you know, I'm up in Alaska for like 6 months throughout the spring, summer, and fall. And I get home and everybody's commenting about how interesting that was. And I got to share the film with my grandpa, who was pretty, you know, influential and inspirational in my life. And he never had been to Alaska. So, you know, I watched that with him, and then all the questions that he was asking me, it just, I don't know, that really kind of sparked something in me. And then the next year that I went, I bought my own video camera, and then I just started filming my own hunts as home video. And, you know, just kind of one thing led to another. Eventually I put out a DVD and did a TV show for a couple of years. That's where I came up with the name Modern Day Mountain Man, because as a kid, that was like my dream, is to live the life of a mountain man. And I mean, that's like a brand name or a TV show name is really what it came about as. And then I got burned out on television. Like, you know, it was a lot different then. That was 16, 17 years ago. It was a lot different than, you know, you really kind of needed sponsors to get your name out there. And obviously social media has kind of changed that. Now it's almost like sponsors need, or personalities, if you will, need sponsors to legitimize themselves. And it was completely reverse, you know, for 20, 30 years up until social media came out. So I got burned out on the marketing, and, you know, these companies, they wanted to, all they cared about is how many times you would plug their product. And I'm just like, I'm not going to do that. I might as well sell pantyhose or something, because that's just going to ruin what I want to do. I'm not interested in being a marketer. I want to be a hunting guide, and I want to show people what it's like to hunt the Alaskan wilderness. And then through that process of, once I got done with television and I just started doing my own, you know, my own films, and, you know, just kind of putting them out there how I felt the story should be told. And then kind of growing through that process. I mean, then it, I don't know, it just kind of took on a life of its own. And, you know, and then I started writing, doing a little bit of public speaking, and kind of just recognizing what people can gravitate to and what people can relate to. And so kind of the goal of my films is to, I guess my goal is to show people what the wilderness of Alaska is like. And for the people who have been there, I want to bring them back to their own experience. And what I found is, again, through writing, you know, writing for magazines, wrote a book, public speaking, and then the video production, is what I want to find is, through my videos, is the human element. Find the story. You know, shooting a sheep, shooting a deer, shooting a bear, you know, yeah, they're all kind of slightly unique. But like, when I look back at my hunts, I don't remember how many times my hunter shot. You know, I mean, I don't remember what caliber they had, but I remember something about that person. I remember something about that adventure. And oftentimes what I remember 5 years, 10 years down the line is something that at the time that it happened, it was insignificant, you know, or seemed to be insignificant. It's something later on in life that really sticks, that, you know, something else happens 5, 10 years later that I remember that person or that experience. And I think, you know, for me, it's like, the most pivotal thing, I was listening to, I've just kind of just started recently listening to Joe Rogan a little bit, and he talked about psychedelics, you know, and how this experience, you know, I don't know if he's maybe used the word like bring you closer to God or help you, I don't know, like you're more connected with the universe or whatever. I've never done psychedelics, but it's, for me, it's like that, the wilderness immersion. That's like, I tell people all the time, that's where the magic happens. And that was, for me, that's what I really experienced. You know, I'd go up to Alaska in April, there for a time, you know, when I was single before I had kids and was married. I'd go to Alaska in April, May, be bear hunting. And then June, July, I'd be out in remote fish camp. August, September, I'd be guiding Alaska. Then I'd go to Idaho and I'd guide elk hunters there. And I mean, I was in the wilderness. I didn't have a cell phone. You know, it was just me, nature, and the few people that I was with. And then sharing campfires with all these hunters. You know, I'd be guiding a hunter, you know, one hunter, let's say 10 to 14 days at a time. And you go through these adversities and these trials, and then that really bonds you, and you form this friendship. And you're in the wilderness away from all the man-made distraction in the world. And these guys would just open up to me, and I'd open up to them. And so, I mean, there'd be guys, I mean, I don't know how many times I've had guys tell me, I've never told anybody this before. I've never told anybody this before. you know, because you're in that intimate setting and you just feel this sense of, I guess, this safe sense, and they're not afraid to be vulnerable. And then that allowed me a look into what is in the heart of men. And I recognized that no matter how much money they have, or on the outside, on the surface, they've got everything together and they've got every worldly thing, that inside there's something, some skeleton, some hurt, some pain, you know, something that they're going through. And I think that's kind of really what gave me the courage to be more vulnerable, more open about my experiences, my life, what the wilderness means to me. And so in all of that, I guess to sum it all up, what I found, I don't know if I can be so bold as to call it my secret sauce. I don't know, maybe that's not fair, but I guess what I feel like I'm trying to capture is the human element of a wilderness adventure.
Yeah, and you do that very well. And like you said, you said something there that really resonated with me, is you're trying, people have been there before, you're trying to regain what they were thinking out there or what they were feeling out there. And that's exactly what you did for me. I went a different route. I, out of high school, I had to get to Alaska, but I went in the Coast Guard and I got to Kodiak, and I did a lot in Kodiak, but I kind of wish I went your route, because being in the Coast Guard and being a sailor sometimes isn't the best way when the darkness starts to hit up there, and I had to leave Alaska or else I was going to become an alcoholic. So that's,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that's when I saw your stuff on YouTube, I was like, oh man, I tell this story to a lot of people, and you know, I got a lot of young men that I'm around, and I told the story to them. I said, I went to Alaska, went across, you know, got out of the road system on Kodiak Island, and we shot all of our deer before the end of the close, you know, to get the other four. You could shoot one on the road system, and then you could shoot your other four off the road system. And I shot those. We went to shoot all the other four off the road system, so because that's what my friends ate. That's all they ate for, you know, to live on. And I sat in camp after doing that on the beach and looked up on the mountain. I had a sheep tag in my pocket, and I could see sheep up there. And I drank too much whiskey or whatever and sat there and looked at those sheep and thought, I don't even want to kill sheep. Who cares? Now, in my 50s, I look back on that day and I go, what in the world are you thinking? Because I'll probably never get another chance to do that again, you know? And
yeah.
And so when I see your stuff and I see what you're putting out, you're telling exactly the same story. You're just doing it from a different end of what you did and what you went through, and then looking back on who you've taken on all these hunts up there. I found that to be really, really, really interesting. And then just what you said also about men, we all have this in us, right? There's always something in us that we're fighting against. And you bring that out in your videos. I mean, your videos show that. And one of our mantras here at the Life Outdoors is there's a lot more to hunting than pulling a trigger. And I truly believe that. And that's what comes out in your videos. Of course, pulling the trigger is a big part of it. But what you're doing up on your videos is being a lot different than just a hunting video. I want to tell you that. That's the reason I got you on here.
Appreciate that. Yeah, you know, when I first went to Alaska, I mean, I wanted, the reason why I became a guide, I wanted to hunt Alaska for myself. And, you know, just growing up basically hand to mouth, working on a dairy farm here in Wisconsin, or, you know, growing up on a dairy farm, I should
right.
say working because I never got paid. you know, just like my family, there was no excess money. I mean, you didn't go on hunting trips, you know. And my grandpa, he lived a pretty cool lifestyle. He was a professional trapper and a farmer. But for me, guiding was just a way that I could go experience the wilderness. I mean, it was just the only way that I figured, man, if I could somehow learn the skill and become a hunting guide, I could go do these trips. And then eventually, you know, I'll have an opportunity to hunt sheep or bear or moose. You know, maybe I'll guide for 5 years or something, and then I can go hunt for myself. I'll gain the skill that I need to know, and I can go do it myself. And so, you know, after 24 years of going up there, I've never even bought a tag for myself. I don't even have the desire to go on a sheep hunt for myself. And so I definitely think, you know, there's something, there's a seed in there. There was a seed in there that like drew me. I mean, I've been enamored. If you watch my YouTube channel, you'll see my intro, you know, kind of how I got started muskrat trapping. But like, I think that's like the, that's one common thread when, you know, God touches people's lives, is they always go up there or they always do something, or they're drawn to something for some reason. And it seems to be, for me, it's almost invariable that during that process, it gets switched. And I dare say 180 degrees. You know, you like, I went up there because I wanted to, I mean, I wanted to guide just because I wanted the adventure and I wanted to hunt those animals for myself eventually. But then during that process, like, that all went away. You know, that, you know, refining process, if you will. And so what I found is that it's way more rewarding to guide somebody else. It's kind of like taking a kid hunting, because these 60-year-old men, a lot of them, they've dreamed of hunting the moose or the bear or the sheep since they were, you know, 8 years old. And to be able to be the conduit to make their dreams a reality, to take all my experience, all the mistakes that I've made, and then to be able to facilitate, make their dreams come true. It's, I mean, it's the greatest joy, or one, certainly one of the greatest joys in life. And ultimately, I mean, I'm sure we're going to be talking about faith a little bit. I mean, that's the Christian life, is to die to oneself so that you can give life and enhance the lives of others and be a light to the world. And that comes through death. To probably live the way you, I mean, I don't know if you still drink, but I mean, you know, you killed off your addiction to alcoholism to some degree, and I'm sure that is what is fueling you to do what you're doing, you know, to inspire and help other people, because you were in the darkness, you found, you know, we find at least some degree of light, and then once we experience that, you realize, like, that's the most tangible, maybe the only real thing in this physical world, is that light, that connectedness to God. And just like nature, everything in nature has a purpose, and everything in nature fulfills its purpose to the maximum of its ability, maximizes its potential until the moment it dies. But we as humans, none of us do that without fail,
right,
the way everything in nature does. And that's what really spoke to me. And like I've always said, is like, I feel nature is the language that I best understand, and it's the one that I'm most interested in learning.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think, you know, more of the alcohol thing is the fact of what, and it could be anything. It doesn't have to be just alcohol. It could be anything. What you have that gets in the way of the way that you want to live. Because the way that you're supposed to live, or you ought to live, I should say,
The way God would have you live.
Exactly. The way God would have you live. If something's getting in the way of that, then that's the problem. And it could be anything. I mean, it could be hunting sometimes, you know, quite honestly.
For sure. I'd say it's in the way of 90%+ of the hunters myself.
Oh, yeah. Twitter. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
99, maybe 100.
Oh, yeah. And definitely that's something that we have to, you know, constantly keep ourselves in check over. At least I do. You know, and I have three boys that I've brought into this too, and it's the same with them. I got to keep them in check over it too. And so when we're looking at this, it is one of those things where the nature is so real, I guess, is the reason that I think I gravitate back towards it all the time, is because you can't lay on the ground and not feel, you know, nature. You can't feel the reality of things if you're in a bed and got, you know, artificial heat and all this and other, but you get out there, it's real out there. And I'm talking to a guy that knows way more about this than I do, but I'm saying that, I think that's why we gravitate, why even humans that don't even have, that never done it before, start gravitating to nature, because they want to feel something real. We live in such an artificial world anymore, an artificial everything around us. I mean, even our, you know, our Instagram feeds, our even like air conditioning is artificial. All this stuff is artificial. You go into a city, everything's artificial. And when you start going back to reality and having to deal with reality right in your face, there's something about that in humans. I think it speaks to our spirit. Would you see, I mean, you see this probably a lot because you get guys that come in there, probably come out of a modern world. You know, a lot of them are making a lot of money so they can come hunting with you and then hit this. And then I bet you there's like a switch in them that, and I bet you it's that reality that hits them. Would you say that, or am I off base here?
No, yep. A couple of thoughts when you say that. One thing that I've noticed, particularly in the Alaskan tundra, you look at it and it just looks like this blanket of pasture. And what I've found is like when you're saying how you lay there, when I'm in Alaska, it almost doesn't matter anywhere. If you just sit there and lay still for 1 minute, like I'll just be laying there to kind of like take a nap. Maybe my face is on the ground. I'm laying on my stomach or whatever. You know, just resting my eyes from glassing for hours. And you look into that tundra and there's all these layers and these different plants and there's just different things going on. And then all of a sudden you see a spider, you know, or you see some worm. And it's just like, we look at things and we just, you know, we just look at it at face value, where if we just slow down a little bit, and that's the beauty of hunting, is you just slow down a little bit and pay attention to the nuance. And so I've got a lot of thoughts here, so hopefully I can get them out. But and then the other thing that I've noticed with people, with hunters, let's say you've got a 10-day hunt, they get about 5 real days, because it takes 2 days for 2 to 3 days for them to decompress. Then, you know, they're not talking about their job or, you know, the travel up here or this or that. And, you know, maybe you kind of get to know them a little bit too. So they tell you about their history. And then about day 3 to day 8, you get the sweet spot where all you're doing is like hunting, surviving, you know, adapting, basically just living in the present moment. And then all of a sudden, somewhere towards the, you know, 1 or 2 days before the end, you hear them, yeah, when I get back home, and then it's over. You know, the adventure, the experience, the wilderness experience, as I always say, that's over. And I believe, I know for me personally, and I believe this is the case for a vast majority of hunters, is they go to the wilderness, and I don't even think we realize it most of the time, is we're experiencing God. I believe it's Romans 1:20 that says, since the beginning or the creation of the world, God's invisible attributes are clearly seen through what is created. And you said something to that kind of alluded to this, but everything in nature is black and white. Nature is honest. Nature is consistent. Everything in nature, as I said before, does what it's supposed to do. And so when you're in that environment, that there isn't these superficialities, these things that are man-made, these things that are ultimately sinfully driven. And when I say that, I mean, you know, everything in this world, money. I mean, so power, mammon, ego, you know, everything is driven, you know, you got sex appeal, or I mean, every advertising, billboards. I mean, it's endless, and it's just so confounding, you know. And you know, I'm a father raising 2 girls and young girls now, 10 and 11, and you know, just trying to help them navigate life, and yeah. So, yeah, I guess maybe I'm kind of getting off the tangent there. But, I mean, I believe that's why every hunter loves, or any outdoors person, that's why they love nature. And I don't even think most of us even realize it. Because I guess I look at it as like in hunting years, I figure I'm hundreds of years old in comparison to what most people will, you know, the amount of time. And, I mean, God's really blessed me in that. I mean, there's been more than one instance where, I mean, I was shaving the margin between life and death very, very close. And so those experiences wake you up. And then, so now for me to maybe this sounds egocentric, but I mean, it's honestly the truth. Like, I rarely post pictures of animals anymore. And if I do, I don't know. I mean, usually it's, if I do, if I'm inspired or feel like doing so, it's usually to tell something that I learned, or, you know, some insight that I gained from the experience or the person that I was with, because it kind of just makes it feel so shallow. I mean, it just feels so meaningless. Like, why would I even waste my breath or my time to just say, oh, this animal scored this, you know, look at this. I mean, yeah, it's fine and good. I mean, so I don't want anybody to take that wrong, but it's just like, that doesn't really interest. I mean, I like seeing that. Like, if somebody's a big bear, I'm like, that's pretty cool.
Right.
You know, but I want to know what else.
Right.
You know, there's got to be something more to that story. That's what I want. And like I've always said, the only stories that really interest me anymore are the ones where guys wiggle in their chair and clear their throat and, you know, maybe take a sip of whiskey before they tell it.
Right.
You know, that they're nervous to tell the story. That's what I want to hear. You know, and it's just like when I was a young guy, you know, you go into any hunting camp and you'll get some old guys that are really good storytellers, you know, and I really appreciate that. But a lot of times the guys that have the most experience and been on the most hunting trips and like really have the stories to share, a lot of times those are the guys that are most quiet, you know? But when you get them alone and they start sharing their stories, man, I love hearing from those guys that are reluctant to share. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you. Don't get me wrong. We all like to see big old bulls or big moose or big bears or all that. We like to see it, but there's, like you said, that is really what it's all about. Is what comes from those stories and how you got there, and some of the hardest hunts that I've been on were probably, I didn't get anything, and those stories are really good too. So did you, when you went up to Alaska, were you a Christian, or did you feel the presence of God when you went and started guiding?
I believed in God. The world would have considered me a Christian. I thought I was a Christian. Many would argue that I was. Maybe I was. I don't know. But I always wrestled. I went to a Lutheran church, and I was, semi-regular. I didn't grow up in the church as you know, a lot of church people would say. But I just, like, I never had the impression that anybody that I went to church with or that I saw going to church was any different than anybody else in the world. And I always thought, if God's real, there should be a marked difference between his people and the people that don't believe in him. And I always wrestled with that. I always, in our church, they talked about God the Father, Jesus the Son, you know, who came to life. He was fully God, but yet fully man. He came to earth. Shouldn't say came to life, came to earth, and, died on a cross for the forgiveness of our sins. I was like, okay. And then the Holy Ghost comes about. You know, I hear about the Holy Ghost, and I'm always staring up in the corner of the church once in a while looking to see if I'd see him. And it was like another language. You know, the pastor would speak, and it was just like, maybe once in a while I'd be like, okay. And then, you know, of course, I think I had teachers tell me in high school I have ADD, which I just think is just a label, you know.
It is.
But so, I mean, I never was good at like paying attention in that kind of setting. And so when I went to Alaska, actually, it's funny because the second year that I went up there, I brought the Bible with me to read it. Because that first year, I mean, I'm like big, thick. It was a King James version too. I didn't know there was like other, translations,
right,
or anything. So, I mean, I picked a hard one. Start with. But that first year, it opened my eyes up. I mean, it just being away from the world really, you know, it humbled me for sure. You get out into the wilderness, and I mean, first time I was flying over Kodiak, I was like, holy crap, what am I getting myself into? These huge mountains, and it was just like the snow looked like it might have been 40 feet deep for all I knew. And I was just like, what am I getting into? And I mean, it made me feel small. You know, you talk about being humbled. That's the blessing and the curse of the wilderness of Alaska. And so I get up there and I love it. And when I came back, so I bring the Bible with me, and you know, it was really tough. I don't think I made it all the way through that year, but I was just like, okay. And my boss at the time, he's like, he goes, "You brought Bible, huh?" I'm like, "Yeah, I figure I'll have a lot of time." He goes, "Is this like some project of yours or something?" You know, he's kind of asking me why I was reading it, and I'm like, he's a church going man. And I just said, you know, I go, I don't know. It's like, I went to church my whole life. I guess I kind of want to figure out what I believe or what I'm supposed to believe. And really what it started for me is I was at a sports show one time, and I was next to some guys that were, you know, had some ministry. I don't even remember what it was called, but they handed me a little pocket Bible, the New Testament, and kind of carried it around with me for years. And then, you know, eventually just one day kind of picked it up, started reading it. And for me, the words just kind of came alive, because I cheated on every English assignment in high school, because I literally, if it wasn't something I was interested in, if it wasn't Old Yeller or Where the Red Fern Grows or whatever, I mean, I could read two words and I'd already be thinking about, you know, am I going to have any coons in my trap when I get home or something. I mean, I couldn't do it. So I just had this girl that helped me out. She let me cheat off of her bed. And so, I'd be snowstormed into a tent, you know, and you go through reading material pretty quick, you know, you have like 2 days where you're just laying in a tent, and they pull out the New Testament, and all of a sudden, just one day, it was like, man, I just read the entire book of John before I moved, you know. And I mean, that was unlike me, because like, I was there, and I just realized that like, those characters of the Bible, those men, that was 2,000 years ago. And what I realized is just like, they were persecuted. They had the same trials and tribulations exactly the way we do today. That it's exactly the same thing that's going on. Yeah, maybe, you know, you're getting bullied or persecuted now today on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. I'm not even on Twitter, but, way off topic here, but I mean, it's just like, I don't remember the verse, because it's something that's just been coming to my mind, is like how when the religious leaders wanted to kill Jesus, and I don't even remember who it was, so I need to study up on this, but somebody said, hey, do you remember this other disciple, that this charlatan, if you will, he was claiming to be God or a prophet or whatever. If we just let him, and it came to nothing, it all dissolved, you know, it went away because it wasn't truth, right? And he said, why don't we just let him be, you know, because if he's of God, there's nothing we're going to be able to do to stop him. And what he said made perfect sense. But what did the leaders, I mean, you see a lot of that going on in our world today. People are saying things that make sense, but the leaders, they squash that out, they censor it, and they won't let it be said. It's exactly what happened. Yep. 2,000 years ago.
Yep.
And I dare say, most Christians have never read the Bible.
Yep. Yep.
Or quote unquote Christians.
Right.
I mean, I would say a vast, vast majority never have. Not saying that because I've read the Bible, I have all the answers. But the way I look at it is like, you look at life. You know, if I'm going to interview somebody for my first modern day Mountain Man employee, other than my wife and myself, and I don't know what he's got for education and whatever, but I'm more interested in who he is. I'm not so much interested in what he knows. I'm interested. I work with this young kid that does some editing for me, and he just has such great character. I would hire him to do anything, because his foundation is so rock solid. I know his parents, I know his family, and I know that if he gives me his word, it is finished, right? And if we're, you know, as Christians, what I struggled with is I was taking that pastor for his word on everything. I didn't know anything for myself. And then when I started reading the Bible, is that Jesus, that's who we are to know. And Jesus was pretty bold, because Jesus laid it all the line. And eventually I just realized, okay, like, Jesus either is the Son of God or he's a madman. Because he doesn't really leave you any wiggle room.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, holy smokes. Well, now this kind of takes you a little bit accountable, right? And so that's where, and I had the, I don't know if I'd have done it if I didn't have all that downtime where I had nothing else to do, you know, to be honest. And so, I mean, then I just start pouring over the word. And, And one thing that I've found of like reading the Bible is, you know, the old adage, the truth hurts. It's invariable. Every time when I would read the Bible and I would read something, like one thing came to mind that or really, really struck me, that in order to follow Jesus, and this isn't something that's real popular in church, and you'll find, and everybody will find a church that they'll fit in. But the truth's the truth, okay? And exactly what it is, I will search for it until the day that I die. I mean, to know everything, just like I'll never figure out everything there is to know right. about hunting, I'll never know everything there is to know about God's word. So, I mean, I've been reproved before, and I mean, I'm learning on the fly. But I believe that the truth, whatever the truth is the same truth that is in nature. It is black and white. And you will find every shade of gray in churches throughout the world. And I want to find the truth. And I believe unequivocally that, I believe that is ascertainable without a quote unquote pastor or organized religion. I firmly believe that.
That's true. No, that's absolutely true.
And I think a lot of people, and the reason why I say that, because I think a lot of people don't recognize that. And I think, oh, so the verse that I came to that I was like, man, I can't do that. Well, if I've learned anything about seeking the Lord and his righteousness, Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. If I've learned anything, is that if you come to a verse that you just say, ooh, I draw the line there, you will never have peace until you face that head on. Just like these guys that want to go to Alaska, and I'd see them in a sports show, and they walk by my booth, and they, oh, that must be nice. That's for rich people. You know, it's like, do you realize that what you're saying, there's power of life and death in the tongue, okay? I've guided a lot of people that aren't rich. I've guided guys that, you know, cut firewood, or they have some side business that's just like, hey, this is what I do. I can go on a hunting trip every 5 years. You know, I don't do this, I don't do that, I don't smoke, I don't have a boat, I don't fish, I don't do this. You know, and so they sacrifice, and they're like, I'm going to make it happen. And so I guess what my point is, I don't even know where I'm going to, but, I guess to get to my original point of, I read in the Bible where it said to be my disciple, no man who loves his wife or his children or his mother or father more than me is fit to be my disciple. Yeah. And I'm just like, man, how could I put God before my wife, before my children? Like, they need me. I need to focus on them, you know, and God comes second. Like, I'm just like, I could never do that. And then all of a sudden one day, just recently here, maybe a couple of years ago, actually, it was like right before I started posting my, what I called Trust the Guide videos on YouTube. That's kind of when I really started on YouTube is, you know, I was sharing my faith at these Christian organizations in the wintertime game feeds. And then COVID came, and then all those things got canceled. And, you know, that was like my only real income for the winter. And we just finished building a house. And of course, you know, building a house goes, you're over budget. And so, I mean, we had no money. I mean, just this fear sets in. And so all I could think to do was like, go back to when, you know, the first time I heard God's voice and he said, share this. And so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go film this on YouTube. I didn't know how to post a video, you know. And I just went out there that day, came up with the title Trust the Guide that day, and posted it on there. But during that process, like I learned, it's like, and I shared it in one of my videos, it's like, I don't see how my wife and I could possibly stay married if I don't have something rock solid to help me navigate through the problems. I wouldn't even say, I definitely, to be clear, I would not begin to say that we were on the brink of divorce or anything, but I would say we had enough problems, and I could just see enough things coming up and enough frustration and confusion of my own mind to know that I couldn't do it on my own. And if I've learned anything for God, every time that I've surrendered and I just died to myself and I'm just like, I don't know how to do this, I can't do this, Lord help me. When you get to that place, to like rock bottom where you're empty, my experience has been, I mean, God is almost like, bam, right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of been the way it's worked for me.
Now, going back to hunting in Alaska, did you find that in Alaska at one point? Were you at a point in your life while you were up there going, what in the world am I doing? Why? Because that's what happened to me. I was on ADAC, Alaska. I was out in ADAC. We did our mid-patrol break there. And I went up to the E-Club, and it was probably 12:30. Going back to the ship, a bunch of us walked. We had to walk. We didn't have anything way to get around. It was in January, so it was in the middle of winter. And we decided we'll play football. And so we didn't have a football, so I had my we'd been drinking a lot. I had my shoe, so we took my shoe off, and we were playing football. And the shore patrol pulls up, because it was a Navy base back then. Now it's, you know, there's nothing out there, but it was a Navy base back then. And we were playing football out in this field, and Shore Patrol says, get out of there. You're playing in a minefield. Yeah, from World War II. you know, whoops. The dumb decisions we make as young guys. But so they escorted us back to the ship. We had to kind of talk to a few people saying, hey, look, we didn't realize it was a minefield, and yeah, we drank too much and this and that. And it was at that moment when I started that night, when I went back to my rack, because, you know, we had our short little 3x3 space on a ship. And I started thinking, man, look, I joined the Coast Guard. The only reason I joined the Coast Guard was so I could get to Alaska. That was it. Because I didn't see any other way I could get to Alaska. And so I joined the Coast Guard to get to Alaska. And here I am playing snow football with my shoe in the middle of a minefield. This is not my Alaska experience that I was after. And it came to that realization going, why am I doing this? Why did I even go this route and get diverted from this when I came up here to experience Alaska? And I those are the moments when you start really self-reflecting. And I had a King James Version Bible that I had as a kid, and I read, and I started reading Romans. And I'm like, how come they never taught me Romans in church? I started reading about, you know, we can't do this by ourselves. We have to have God's grace, or we're not getting anywhere. Did you kind of experience that same kind of transformed idea in those times? I think that kind of stuff does that to you when you are at a point where you're like, man, what am I doing here? I was just wondering if that was something that might have gone through your mind up there.
Totally. Yeah. So I kind of believe, I wouldn't say that this is like scriptural really, but I know it's been true for my own life. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's anti-scriptural. Like, I like talking to young kids, you know, like chasing your dream and like finding your ultimate purpose in life. I almost think that that's like overdone, and you'll see that in a lot of churches. But I do think it's true from this reason, is you need to chase your dreams and then come up empty when you reach them.
There you go.
That's what'll change your life.
Yeah.
Because that's when you realize, I mean, and that's why, like I say, you see it with like music and, you know, people that are famous and like climb the tower of the world, whatever it may be, an actor or something. And it's just like, once they get to the top, holy crap, that sucks. Because now where do you go? Now what else do you do? And then what else, you know, what happens so very often is they collapse and they tumble down the mountain and they get pummeled, you know, because they come up empty.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, for me, I don't remember what like episode it is. I don't even remember what I called it. But I talk about it in my one Trust a Guide film. I'm 99% sure is my life as a young person who started bow hunting. You know, it was like a dream to shoot a Pope and Young whitetail. Now they're pretty common, but back, you know, here in Wisconsin or where I live anyway, you know, they were pretty hard to come by. And I was like, oh man, that would be amazing. You know, I'd read from authors like Greg Miller and, you know, Miles Keller. I mean, these guys were my idols. And of course, like Chuck Adams, and I was like, man, you got to be a pretty good hunter to kill a Pope and Young Whitetail, right? And so I putz around with it, and it, I mean, it was like, it was darn near like my life goal, like while I was in high school. And I remember it was, I was well out of high school, and I was going through this period of depression, which I talk about in this video. So, you know, that'd probably be a story in and of itself. But I mean, there was a period of, for me, of like 2 years where I thought about suicide every day when I was like back home in Wisconsin, because I would always come back home in the wintertime, pound nails, help my parents on the farm. But when I'd go to the wilderness, I could find, I could find peace. Like I could get away, I could escape from it, right? But anyways, I get home from Idaho from guiding, and I start bow hunting again. I had, I mean, it was just home for a couple of days, I think. And I go out one day, climb the tree, and I'm at, still climbing the tree, and I see this buck come down. He's huge, you know. And basically just walks right under my tree. And I mean, all I have time to do is like put my release on, grab an arrow, pull my bow, whack. I'd make a perfect shot on the buck. He was like right underneath my tree and the blood spraying out. He takes off and he's running. He runs it out of sight. And I just remember feeling so elated. And I'm like, I did it. Finally, I got a Pope and Young buck, you know, and I was so excited for about 3 seconds. And I just, it was like a vacuum. You know, I mean, I was elated. I was so happy. And I was just like, woof, I just got sucked back to reality. Billy, you're the same person. Nothing's changed in your life. You have the exact same problems you've had before. You're the same failure you've always been. And yeah, so then I just realized that. And so that's why. But in the same breath, like, I think those dreams are important because for me personally, I believe, at least in large part, God speaks to us that way. It's this call. There's something in that direction. And so you've just got to step forward in faith that whatever it is you're looking for, you'll find it there. But I think until you come to Christ, I would say, like, it's all selfish. You know, like, I mean, I'm in the hunting arena, or the popular word is space, right? And when I felt the Lord following or calling me into ministry, I was like, oh man, I can't imagine going to seminary, you know. I'm like, man, I cannot see that. And I mean, I started kind of like in investigating it, and then I'm just like, man, I kind of knew it wasn't right, but I was like, I didn't know what else to do. And then finally, one day it kind of dawned on me, this isn't the example, or this isn't the instance, but I know one example when I kind of, one of the first times I shared my faith was at this, it was the Grand Slam Club Obis, a prestigious sheep hunting organization. They asked me to share my faith at a prayer breakfast. So it was real early in the morning. There was an awards banquet the night before. So, I mean, I think people were probably up till 2 a.m. And I mean, a lot of the people in that room were hungover, you know. And so I get up there and I kind of share my testimony, and I wasn't ready for it. I was so intimidated by those people, to be honest. That was a big part of it. And I never spoke to a group in the morning, which is, that's pretty tough. And it was flat, man. I was so nervous that people could see it. And I just wanted to crawl in a hole and die. And I'm packing up my stuff when it's all over and people are leaving. And this guy starts walking towards me. He's about 60 years old. And I'm like, oh, I hope he doesn't want to talk to me. I just want to get out of here. And as he gets closer, I see tears coming out of his eyes, rolling down his cheeks. And I'm like, oh, man, my presence, you know, it couldn't have been that bad. You know what I mean? Again, I'm thinking about me. And then he walks up to me and he holds his hand out. And he's like, Billy, I'm going through the hardest period of my life. Never told me what it was. But he's like, I just had to tell you what your words meant to me today. And he said, thank you. And it was like God hit me in the chest with a sledgehammer. It was better than any 10-foot bear, 70-inch moose, 40-inch ram. And I mean, I was just kind of like standing there. I mean, it was like I did not know what to say. But I mean, I just felt it. And it was, for me, that moment, that's when it hit me. It was like, okay, like all my interest and my fascination with nature and trapping and fishing and hunting and figuring out how nature works and connecting all the dots, it was like in that moment, bam, like I knew this is why. I mean, God called you to the wilderness. This is why you, like, I never said no. Like, I just had a kid ask me today on Instagram. He's like, oh man, you've lived a cool life. I'm 20 years old. You know, any tips for a guy like me to kind of live a life like what you've lived? And, you know, I gave him some advice, you know, just real short, real brief, but it's just like, everybody wants everything to be easy. And I mean, who doesn't? I don't want to work any harder than I have to. That's human nature. But I mean, if you called the thing that you can't, I mean, I think the only way to do it is just like go in the direction that you can't stand it if you don't try it. I mean, that's pretty broad, but during that process, you'll make so many mistakes, you know, and that's why I think education, like formal education, is just like so overrated, because all you receive is regurgitated information and stuff that, like Henry Ford said, why would I waste my time learning facts and figures when I can hire people to do that? You know, he's like, he wanted to innovate. He wanted to invent. That's who he was. And I mean, some people, they're probably born to study facts and figures. That's fine. But just get out there, go in the direct, like, honestly, since somebody says, hey, how do I, you know, do what you did? The greatest thing that I had for me was a farm background and the knowledge, like I won't say that I knew everything there was to know about farming and dairy farming, but I knew it wasn't for me because I did it so much and I worked. My parents worked so hard. You know, we're always on the verge of bankruptcy. And I was like, that was the best thing for me. If I owe my, if I have anything that if I didn't have, I would have never, you know, done the things that I've done. It would be growing up on a farm and knowing that wasn't the life for me.
Yeah. And that
was the key.
And that all that stuff is part of your Christian walk. People always, it's funny because, you know, we have so many televangelists and things like that nowadays that tell us, oh, you become a Christian and life is so much better for you. It is, because you've changed in your spirit. But at the same time, all that hard stuff, all of the stuff that you went through, all of the pain, the suffering, and all that stuff was all to move God's will on this earth through what you're doing. And so when I talked to quite a few young people, I was a youth pastor for a long time. When you talk to a lot of young people, you tell them, hey, look, lean into what is at your hand at this moment and do it, because that's what God's plan is for your life. If you know that you're supposed to be doing something and you're not doing it, it's going to eat on you. Or if you're doing something that you know you're not supposed to be doing, that's going to eat on you as well. Let that eat on you move you one way or another. And I'm, you know, you were talking about you coming from a dairy, you know, working on a dairy farm and that mindset. That all moved you to be the guide that you are, which then that moved you to be the evangelist that you are. And that's all part of God's plan. And it's all just as important as the other. And I think young people need to understand that. Maybe they got to figure out what they're chasing. And it's Christ himself. And then there's two things, right? That's all we got to worry about is love God and love others. And those are the two things that you really work for. And the rest of it all falls underneath that. Black and white, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it, is like, you're totally right. I mean, yeah, like I said, being with so many men, and then, oh yeah, to maybe finish that story and kind of to your point, like, that's when I recognize, it's like, okay, Billy, you have your ministry, you have your, I guess, I don't know if I want to be so bold to say, but like my flock, because I struggle with, you know, the Bible says very clearly that anyone that's teaching the word will be judged more harshly or more critically. I don't know exactly. I'm not verbatim on that. So, I mean, like, I take that with fear and trembling, you know. But so, I mean, I'm stepping out still all the time. Like, I'd say that's the one thing that, and I've said it on my videos, and I don't know how it comes across because it's weird for me, is like, people, I think sometimes they'll come up to me and they'll say, man, I love your videos, and, you know, I love your fireside chats, they always say. And I'm like, okay, you know, yeah, that's great, you know, but like, I'm nobody's savior. You know, I mean, people, I'm not comparing myself to Paul. I mean, by any means, but I mean, like when he did things and, or I think it was Paul, maybe Peter as well, but like, people like bowed down to him. He's like, whoa, 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 get off your knees. I'm just a man. I'm just like you, you know? And that's like, that stuff, honestly, kind of freaks me out a little bit, but in the same token, like it makes me realize how much people are hurting and how much they're longing for the truth. And so in this process of mine, like I get somebody at most of the events where I speak, they'll come to me and they'll like give me some little twist of doctrine. Okay. You know, like something a little bit different. And I mean, I've kind of like, to be perfectly honest, I've kind of suspended. I've kind of held back on my trusted guide videos because like I need to get things right, you know? And also when I did started trusted guide again, it was like, I had nothing else going on. Right. And, you know, I mean, in my mind, it, like I was just on fire, you know, it's like people were messaging me and I'm helping people, you know, at least that's what I'm thinking. And like, I kind of like lost sight of my family a little bit. It kind of like took over. I'm just like, oh, I felt so rewarded and so full and so purposeful. And, yeah, I just, you know, I'm just trying to find balance, I guess, just with my own family. And then now like this winter, once I got back to kind of like a full slate of speaking and traveling and stuff, I kind of like lost time of it. And so that never quits, you know, that what you said, like what, you know, follow what's eating you or, you know, whatever your quote was. I kind of think that never quits, because yeah, I don't think you have, I know for me, if I ever like, let's say master something, I don't want to do it anymore. I'm not interested. I've built a couple of houses and I love build. I still like building, but like once the challenge is over, I find myself what's next. And so I really think that as a Christian, that's the way it is. And you've probably heard me say it before. I think if you're going to a church where they say being a Christian is life on cruise control, I mean, I would have a serious conversation. I mean, I wouldn't say run right away, but I would have a conversation with what they mean by that. Yeah, maybe I think there's times of cruise control. I think it's just like driving across the country. Yeah, there's times where it's just like, yeah, man, let the desires of your heart be known to God and he will give them to you. Yeah, I think there's times of that. But yeah, if you read Paul, he and James talks about it, take joy in the trials and tribulations because that's going to create character and perseverance and ultimately joy and love, because that's where you're going to grow. And that's the value that I have to my clients when I'm guiding today. I can't pack the stupid heavy 150 pound bordering on 200 pound packs at times that I could when I was young, but I'm a way better guide because I've made so many mistakes that we're not going to have to climb, you know, the mountain three times to get the ram. Hopefully we're going to just have to climb them once because I've learned from all those mistakes. And so all those things that we go through, those trials and tribulations, that's the fuel. That's the gold. That's we've been refined to at least an extent that we have some gold to offer somebody else.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, like you said, one thing I would really like to go back to and kind of reiterate on is what you said about truth, because we're living in an area now where truth is being beat up, quite honestly, and there's so many half truths, and people believe that those half truths, and I hate even use that term because it's not, there's no such thing as a half truth. It's either the truth or it's not. But people are using this for political gains, for all sorts of different ideas. And one of the things that you'd said about truth was that it's black and white. And just like you were talking about your journey as you go through and you're searching for truth, and we do that when we're hunting, right? I mean, that's exactly what hunting is trying to find out the absolute truth of, I guide duck hunters, putting the decoys in the right spot That's the place that they're going to kill ducks, and that's the truth. And if I didn't believe in truth, I'd be so wishy-washy, I'd never know where to put anything. I wouldn't know how to do anything. But when we start talking absolute truth and we start talking gray areas, the gray area is only places where we don't know the truth. And I think that's what you're trying to say here is when you have, you know, you started follow the guide and this and that, and you want to portray the truth as you know it, because you're looking at the absolute truth of things. And when we start talking doctrines and stuff, there are some places we just don't know. We just aren't going to know. There's absolute truths that you stand on, but like baptism, for one example, you know, there's people that believe you get baptized by sprinkling water, and there's people that believe that you could only be baptized if you get dunked. Those kind of things are things that aren't really spelled out, although everybody in the Bible was dunked. But those are the kind of things that people spell out in the Bible. And when you're talking about what you're trying to portray to people through what you're doing here, I just want to offer this as you are doing what God is leading you to do. And so when you do all that and you are helping people, you are helping people. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know about this situation or I don't know about that situation. But continue to do that. Continue to use what you're being given to do to advance that. And you do that just as well in your videos. You know, people... it's hard to say for me, because what happens is we as humans get compartmentalized, and we hold religion way up here, and then we hold reality down here, and we try to separate the two. We call what we call religion. And what we need to do is we need to understand that we are spiritual beings, that we should throw religion out. We're spiritual beings, and everything that we do is part of our spiritual walk with God. Everything. Having kids, our sex lives, the way that we use alcohol, because, you know, God doesn't forbid alcohol, the way that we treat other people, the way that we hunt, what we do on video, the way we use YouTube, the way we use our social media, all this stuff is who we are in Christ. And if it's not, too many people want to go, well, I believe in God, but he's way up here, but this is how I live my life. And that's not how things are. That's not how things are. We are one spiritual being, and if we actually believe that Jesus Christ is who he says he is, and that he has done what he's done on the cross, and that he has imparted his Holy Spirit within us, then everything that we do is a Christian act. Everything. It might be a bad example or a good example, but everything we do is a Christian act if you're a Christian. I don't know how that hits as far as what you're doing, you know, with the content that you're putting out, but I firmly believe that. You know, when I was in youth group, I would ask the kids all the time, I'd say, hey, what movies would you guys like to see? What would you like to see and we could talk about? And a lot of them would bring up movies that are pretty popular within the, you know, with everybody's watching them. And then they would say, but we shouldn't watch that at church. And I'm like, seriously? Is this really what you're talking about right now? You're saying, and that's what I'm talking about, is that Immanuel Kant thing where you're separating spiritual things and material things, and you're saying that there's this bridge, and we actually live here, but this stuff is something that we don't know. And I point out to him, I said, well, are you guys all watching it? And, oh yeah, we just don't watch it at church. And don't get me wrong, I understand there's people that might get offended if you watch certain movies. But they're talking about like movies that talk about existential things that we could have conversations about, and that they're looking at with from a spiritual aspect. And I'm like, why in the world would, if you're watching it outside of church, why do you not think that it's not good to watch in church? And I see the same thing with hunting. Hunting's the same way. You know, people talk the same thing about hunting. They say, well, Or I've had conversations at church, and they're like, man, we're talking about hunting at church. We should probably be talking about God things. I'm like, dude, it's the same thing. It's one and the same thing. It's all the same. So I don't know. Maybe that's rambling, but I'm trying to help you.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. Well, and as you're saying that, I'm almost like thinking of a title of a video or a book or a message is like, go to the gray. You know, it's just like, what you don't know, that should be what you're trying to figure out. The gray area, if you will. You know,
yeah.
Like, okay, this is not black and white for me. Yeah, I agree. I think, and I think, you know, like in hunting, you know, you develop instinct. You know, I'd say maybe we're born. I don't really know if you're even. Yeah, you're probably not really born with it. I think, you know, maybe if you have an interest in it, you're probably going to catch on quicker. But like, there's hunting, and like, let's say I've got a packer following me that's been hunting. You know, it's his first year, maybe his second year, third year, whatever. Or my hunters themselves, they've, you know, shot whitetails back in Pennsylvania or something, and they offer their opinion, or like, oh, you know, we need to do this, or what about doing this? And okay, and that's valid. You know, I always try to, like, you know, particularly my client, you know, a lot of times the packer, I'd maybe probably rather have him just like, sometimes I'll ask, I mean,
right,
to be honest,
right.
Like, if I'm like, man, if I'm kind of like, if I'm right on that borderline of black and white, but then other times there's just like, no,
no,
I mean, that's not right. I mean, and I could explain it probably, but I mean, sometimes it's like so far off the mark. Sometimes, yeah. I mean, I'm considering that, like, but my instinct or my discernment, of course, in hunting, you know, there's always variables for sure. And, you know, so there probably really isn't an ultimate truth, but you can always fine tune it and get closer. But I mean, like, once my instinct tells me that, okay, it's 40% this way, 60% this way, you know, success, I'm going to the 60% way. I mean, it's just automatic.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless you really, really give me something to change my mind, that's the way it's going to be. So instinct is much like discernment, as I believe, as we're walking with the Lord and we encounter those trials and tribulations, that's just like, that's where your instinct is developed as a hunter. When you make mistakes, you set up those decoys, and it was just like, man, that blew up in our face. They all landed on the other end of the pond.
Yeah.
You know? Well, that's where you develop your discernment.
Right.
That's what's going to give you the foundation to stand upon when you have the next, you know, scenario where things aren't going right, and you're like, okay, I've done this before, this same thing happened, when this, we need to make some changes. And then you do that a couple of times, and then it works. And then the next time when you come into a situation that's similar, it's like, boom, you're automatic, like, no, we're doing it this way, like, that's not going to work, we cannot do that, that will you know, lead to death, you know, that's
right.
Not going to work,
right? Yeah, and I'm sure you get it too. I get it on our YouTube channel as well, and I'm sure you get it as well. People come on and say, man, I was with you, I love your content until you prayed. I've had that a lot. And
oh, yeah.
And I'm like, man, you're coming to my content because I'm trying to be as genuine as possible about what we're doing. And I'll tell you what, if we aren't praying out there and we're not putting it on film, we're not being genuine at all. You don't want to see anything I'm doing because it's all fake. And,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, in YouTube world, or in the digital world that we're living in now, everybody's chasing what everybody else wants. And the fact of the matter is, we're trying to put out something that's genuine. And quite honestly, I know it's hard sometimes for us. I'm like, man, if I just didn't do that, I probably would have got a lot more views on this video. And then I'm like, I better check myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you probably feel that too. You know, I got some real good friends, born and raised outdoors, are good friends of mine too, and they feel the same thing. They get people telling them the same stuff. And but at the same time, man, it wouldn't be genuine if we didn't do this. It wouldn't be genuine at all. And quite honestly, for us, I don't think it'd be my purpose for doing it if I was giving up on those things. So I want to commend you. You know, we've been at this now for quite a while, for an hour or so, but I want to come in, and I need to get you back on here and talk more, because you are a book with a lot of pages and a lot of deep pages, and it's good to hear from you. It's good to have that out there in the hunting world for sure. But at the same time, I want to commend you on what you're doing. You know, your YouTube channel, is helping a ton of people. It really is. It helps me. You know, when I don't have a whole lot of outlets to go to when I'm talking spiritual things, because I worked for a church for about 14 years, and I love churches and I love church people, but at the same time, it's nice to see somebody who has been grabbed by the Lord and is doing what they're saying, and there's not other things involved in that a lot of times. So yeah, I love to see what you're doing. I appreciate it. Can you tell us some of the avenues to where people could get a hold of what you're doing on, you know, I know you got a, like a website and a YouTube channel and all that. Can you tell them what the avenues are?
Yeah. Yep. If you Google search modern day mountain men, pretty much find everything. I am on Facebook. I am on Instagram. You know, I kind of post like some short videos on there, and then I kind of post what I'm, where I'm speaking, you know, when my videos are released and that kind of thing. So I'm not super active, but yeah, you'll find pages for that. I think both Modern Day Mountain Man on Facebook and at the Modern Day Mountain Man on Instagram. YouTube, yep, I've got a fair number of videos. My film's on there. That's Billy Mole's Adventures. Again, Google search Modern Day Mountain Man, you'll find that. My website's BillyMolesAdventures.com. Yeah, you'll find all my gear and all my films will be on there. Yeah, people nowadays, I think they're pretty much anybody listening to this is more tech savvy than I am, so they'll Google search Modern Day Mountain Man, they'll find that.
All right, well, thanks a bunch, Billy, for coming on. I know I've been after you for like a year and a half trying to get you on here, and one way or another we finally made it happen, but I sure appreciate it because of what you're doing in, not in the just the hunting community, but in the world. You know, I'm sure there's people watching your stuff that have never hunted a day in their life, and you're affecting those people too. So I just want to commend you on that. And you guys, anybody that's listening to this, that's listened to my stuff before, if you have not heard of Billy Moles, you need to go over and check out his stuff, because you will be mesmerized on the hunting videos for sure. One last thing before I let you go here. I ask all my guests this, and I got to ask you, and you may not give me an answer, but that's all right. What's your favorite animal to hunt?
Grizzly bear, brown bear.
There you go. Hey, that was easy.
For sure. Oh, there's no doubt about it. They're so smart. I mean, it tests. And the reason why is they're smart. I learn more from hunting them than any other animal, and to hunt them successfully and to, you know, to kill a mature boar, they test every facet as a hunter that I know. You need experience, you need strength, you need patience. It just takes, you got to be a very well-rounded, seasoned hunter to be successful on them. And yeah, for that reason, that's why they're my favorite.
That, and you got to overcome fear. I've seen some of your videos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then the fear factor is there too, because yeah, you want to get it right. You know, you don't want to, yeah, you don't want to mess that up. A mistake could cost you your life in any Alaskan hunt, but yeah, particularly with bear hunting. Yeah.
Well, thanks a bunch for coming on here. I really appreciate you taking your time out. I know how your time is right now, and you're you know, back home trying to be around the family and stuff. So I do appreciate it. But is there any last words you'd have to like to say before I take off?
No. Appreciate the time, the opportunity, and I think I know. The other thing that I guess I'd maybe say is, like, I feel like I know what's in the heart of every hunter, because I mean, I've done it so much. You know, I figure at this point, 9 years of my life has been lived in the wilderness and, you know, hunting or fishing camp somewhere, and just through all those conversations that I've had with people. And I just think that the heart of hunters is, I mean, that's what America was founded on. People that are adventurous, that are seeking to test themselves. And I just think that we need more men, and we need more, you know, kind of like I said, the rednecks, the coyotes, you know, as I call us, just the people or those among us that now society maybe kind of wants to brush to the side, maybe sort of exterminate. The world needs more just good, hardworking, red-blooded men to kind of step forward. And I've met so many Amen. Men that I feel have more Christ-like in hunting camps, that have so much more Christ-like characteristics than they would imagine and maybe more Christ-like characteristics than some people that I've experienced in churches, you know? And so it's just for, I know that there's a lot of people out there that think that, you know, they're not good enough. Well, read the Bible. You will find out you're the guy Jesus came to this earth for.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Pleasure.
Thanks for joining us for another installment of the Barebow Hunter Podcast. Remember, we couldn't even be talking about this stuff if it wasn't for our public land. So go and support the people that are protecting it, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers and TRCP. Also, if you'd like to see more of Barebow Hunters, go to our Facebook group, go to our Instagram at Barebow Hunters, like us, and hashtag all of your photos with your Barebow goodness in them, Barebow Hunter. We have a website as well. You can go over there, check out the rest of the podcast. We have videos, we have t-shirts and hats. Thanks again. Until then, shoot straight.